Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. I'm your host, Tom Majeur, with my sister, Sue Majeur. Welcome back, Sue.
That's me. Thank you.
You're welcome. And of course, it wouldn't be the Garden Guy without the Garden Guy. Welcome, Gary Heilig.
I'm happy to be here.
It's so good to have you. Are now retired, but you're in constant demand to put on seminars and to record this show. It's just a wonderful privilege to do this. We're doing the August program, and Sue, why don't you have the word of prayer, and then we want to talk about the wonders of the garden, that God is growing, and then we'll get into the regular quiz and the subjects of the month. So, Sue, would you lead us in prayer?
Certainly. Heavenly Father, thank you for the dazzling variety that you have created. I mean, you've created everything on earth, but even just this small one subject that we are devoting our time to learn about you, and it's just amazing and awe-inspiring just looking at a small portion of what you've created and know that you love us and designed it especially for us, because you really do love us. And so help us to learn more about that and share it with others so they'll know about you too. In your name, amen.
Amen. Now,
amen.
Gary, we were having a conversation as we prepped for the show, and we got to thinking about the wonders, the details. You know, sometimes as gardeners or of either a floral garden or a vegetable garden or a lawn and such, I think we overestimate our contribution to this process. Yes, we put in the sweat equity, but ultimately, we're just working with a system that God's created from the beginning of the time. He says, after its kind, that these plants stay within their, you'll use all those fancy terms, but genomes or something like that. But sometimes we need to sit back and just say, wow, God is just great in his diversity and the detail. Just kind of wow our senses with things that marvel you as a lifelong gardener, and it's been your profession and your love.
I think that one of the things that you could do to learn to appreciate plants more and what they're able to do is to take a plant physiology course. And plant physiology explains to you how all of the systems work. And it really amazes me when I think about how plants take sunlight and take that energy and convert it to chemical energy, like in the case of the carbohydrates that they produce, and many other things. They produce all the nutrients that they need, and they also produce nutrients that we're going to need later when we consume those plants. But it amazes me that people still think that this happened by accident, and it's just absolutely not very logical. And I think about the new James Webb Space Telescope that they're sending pictures back now, and they're looking way into the universe. And whether you're looking at the vast universe or down to the simplest plant, they're so different and amazing. And I have some of these things when we start talking about the different types of plants and in our quiz.
Absolutely. You know, Gary, as this being my third gardening season in a hoop house and my fourth in the outside garden, and I've been gardening, dabbled a little bit over the last, you know, couple decades, but it just amazes me how these plants on time all of a sudden emerge. Of course, I'm talking about the ones that I want to grow, but even seeing the ones I don't want to grow, oh yeah, I remember this is the time of year, and this weed is out, and there's early weeds and there's late weeds. Everything has a time frame. It's a clock that God built into those seeds. Can you build on that a little bit?
Well, one of the things when you mention weeds, a lot of times we don't think about these plants that we call weeds, because a weed is nothing more than a plant that is growing where you don't want it. And the weeds themselves can be very nutritious to eat, or as we talk about some of the medicinal plants a little bit later, they can do a lot of different things that can help us to stay healthy. And of course, the creation has also been damaged because there are a lot of plants that will kill you. I was reading about a plant yesterday. It's called a beech apple. And if you eat it, it tastes sweet and it's agreeable, but it's a really bad plant. And I read about another plant last night, and I didn't want to get too negative today in the class, but I read about this one plant that if you just stand under it while it rains, it can be threatening to your life because chemicals will shed off of the plant and can make you very sick.
Wow.
So the devil has messed up a lot of things too.
Wow. Hey, Gary, why don't we get back to the quiz and get back on our normal schedule?
Okay. Well, the first question is, most people think that all plants are vegetarian, but can you tell me what is the largest carnivorous plant on Earth and what do they eat?
All I know is the Venus flytrap is a carnivorous plant, so the rest is Sue's answer.
I suspect that it's one of those boreal butcher plants that they've found some, like, rodents that have fallen in there and been digested.
That's right, the pitcher plant. And actually, there's a pitcher plant that is about as large as a human head, and they do catch rodents like shrews and mice. Although the mice are pretty smart, and some of the mice have learned how to get what they want from the plant without falling into it. But another one is, I like to talk about where plants come from, and where do you think they first found apples growing?
Far, far away?
I think it's...
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's not the United States. Yeah, Kazakhstan. And they've done DNA analysis of apples, and they believe, based on tracing that DNA back, that they were they can trace it back to the mountains of Kazakhstan. And it's what they found, that particular apple is a different species, but it's considered like the great grandparent of the domestic apple that we know today.
I need a little bit of a geography lesson. What's Kazakhstan next to?
Kazakhstan is one of the countries that are adjacent to Russia.
Okay.
Aren't the apples that we think of, when we think of the nice apples that we all like to eat, aren't the original apples like these little tiny hard?
Oh no, they're nothing like what we have today.
So what kind of
other thing I was going to say? It's Kazakhstan is in what we call Central Asia, Tom.
Okay. So.
Okay, what were you going to say?
I was going to ask is, if we have a better apple today, we have Fuji's and Honey Crisp or whatever, what kind of apples did Johnny Appleseed distribute, and how good were they?
Well, these were called Malus, that's the genus Domestica. That's what these apples that we're eating today and what Johnny Appleseed most likely spread. But the reason why we have all these different apples is because of university and private breeding programs where they cross two varieties that they like, and then they take the progeny from that and they might cross it again with another parent. So a lot of fruits they do have the information that will tell you what the crosses were, but in other areas they don't have the information because a lot of the crosses were done by private individuals that did not keep records.
So
the next question is, okay, go ahead.
Well, I just was thinking, you mentioned that people breed for certain varieties of
characteristics.
Apples.
Well, characteristics.
Characteristics.
That's what we look for. It might be higher sugar content or a better balance of acid to sugar, or it might be size or disease resistance or crispiness or juiciness. There are all these different things. Thin skins. There are lots of different characteristics that people would want to fool around with.
It seems like we've got more varieties than ever before. How fast or how wide is this assortment? Are we getting more varieties bred over time? Are they coming faster?
There are breeding programs going on all the time at various universities, especially in the big apple-producing states like Washington, for instance, New York. There's probably some going on here in Michigan because we're in the top five apple producers. But the thing that you have to understand is if you come up with a really nice cultivar, what they do now is they patent it and then they limit the production of it and only certain people can grow it, and that way they can keep the price up for a longer period of time. The margins for a lot of these things are very small, so if you get a little bit of an advantage and you can ride a patent for 20 years, then that's a good thing for the farmer.
Okay.
So the next question is about brambles, like raspberries, blackberries, and things of that sort. First of all, I want to know, do you know what a loganberry is?
Sister does.
And can you grow it in
Michigan? Yeah, I actually do know that. Because I don't remember which crosses they are, but I think all of these are crosses between blackberries and raspberries.
Yeah, the loganberry is a hybrid of the North American blackberry and the European raspberry. And it can be grown in Michigan. Okay, the next one is a boysenberry.
Yes, I've had that before.
That's the same thing, though. It's a different hybrid, but it's still a hybrid, right?
Yeah, it's also a cross between a European raspberry and a European blackberry. Now, the first one, the loganberry, was from the North American blackberry, but this one, the boysenberry, is a cross between the European raspberry and European blackberry. But also, there's some mention that there might be some American dewberry and loganberry in it, but various sources didn't agree. And then there's one more I want to ask you about, is something called a tayberry. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
I haven't heard of it, but I think it's a hybrid, too.
Yeah, it is. They're all hybrids. The tayberry is a cross between the European red raspberry and the American Pacific Coast blackberry, but so it's very similar to the boysenberry in terms of it has some similarities to it, but the tayberry is a larger berry and much more productive, and it's thornless. So you can grow that one also in Michigan because it'll grow in zone 5, but the boysenberry, you cannot. It grows in zone 6. So if you had a cold winter, it would kill it here in Michigan. But the boysenberry has a very nice flavor, though.
I think I've tried it in yogurt and jam. I thought it was pretty good.
Usually you don't see tayberries at the store. They're kind of a specialty type thing. Now, here's the next one. Now, Tom might do better than this. Who's older between the two of you, Tom, you or your sister?
We're not telling. No.
All right, we'll find out by this question.
Okay.
When you think of getting your vitamin C, what fruit do you think of? What comes to mind?
Oranges.
Orange juice. Remember Anita Bryant pushing it?
Yep.
Well, I want you to name 4 fruits that have a higher level of vitamin C. And we're basing it on if you had a cup of that fruit, like orange segments or slices of these 4 fruits. They have more vitamin C than oranges. You want to guess what they are?
Of course I do, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get the answer right.
There are a lot of choices.
Yeah, I know. I've heard this over and over again, and I think it's some of the things that we eat normally. It just doesn't come to mind. So I will defer to my dear sister, my younger sister. My younger sister.
Well, I will date myself by saying I'm old enough to remember those Tang commercials.
No, that's that not real juice, though. That's not real juice.
It was dreadful. No, I'm going to say...
Actually, I liked it. I loved it. But, of course, I think I was somewhat prejudiced because I really followed the space program, and the astronauts drank Tang, so I wanted to drink it.
That was their big schlock that they were... pushing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say pineapples and not pineapples. Strawberries, maybe?
Nope.
Kiwi?
Kiwi is one of them.
Let's see, what was that other one in that book? Guava?
That's another one. That's good. Good. I would stay in that area if I were you. Tropical
mangoes?
Fruit.
Mangoes?
Not mangoes.
Papayas?
Papaya is the third one. And one more. And I'll give you a little hint. It starts with an L.
An L.
And it's not lemon.
Limes?
No, it's not lime either. It's not even a citrus plant. Starts with an L, ends with an E. One is sometimes called a nut, but it's not a nut.
Oh, a lychee?
Lychee, right. All of those four have higher levels of vitamin C than an equivalent amount of fresh fruit. Of course, most people would not eat a whole cup of kiwi, for instance. But anyway,
which part of the world
here's
does
the next question?
Part of your question is which part of the world does it come from?
Well, I can tell you that kiwi originated in China. Guava and mangoes were probably middle to South America. Lychee, I suspect, is also from an Asian country. If I was going to guess, it'd be China, but I'd have to look that up.
Okay.
You know, as I understand,
but if you've ever had those, they're delicious.
Somebody told me that we're pretty insular as far as a lot of our produce here in the United States, as far as our climate dictates things, and also trade agreements, and also the friability of the fruit. You know, and somebody told me that in the rest of the world, they actually have more varieties of mango than we have of apples.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
Definitely. That is true, yes. At most, you might see one or two in the store, but there are many more varieties of mango, just like there are many more varieties of avocados, but we don't see very many of them. But they don't normally label avocados by their variety name anyway, like they would apples. But and same thing with bananas. We talked about this before. We basically eat one variety of banana called the Cavendish, and there are many others out there, some with larger seeds. Some will taste better than others, but the one that people prefer the most is the Cavendish. So here's the next question. What plant grows at the highest altitude in the world?
A fern.
Tom, I actually know this one.
Is it a fern?
No.
Nope.
It's some, I forget the exact name, but it's a moss thing. The moss thing, and they've even found some on Everest, I hear.
Outstanding. It's called sandwort, and it's a moss. It grows up to 21,260 feet above sea level on Mount Everest. It's the highest flowering plant in the world. It's a flowering plant, too.
I bet it grows really, really slow at that altitude.
I bet you don't get this one, Sue. What plant puts down the deepest roots in the world?
Well, I bet it's either some sort of tree or some sort of grass.
It's a tree.
Okay, let's go for the biblical answer of figs.
Well, I'm gonna no, it's not figs. They're not, their roots aren't that deep. I'm gonna give you a hint that should help you get it. The person that takes care of sheep are called what?
Shepherds.
Shepherds.
Yeah, it's called the shepherd's tree, and it's native to the Kalahari Desert, and the roots have been found down to 230 feet.
Wow.
And the reason they discovered that is there were some well drillers that were drilling wells, and they were heading down to the groundwater, and they hit some roots down 230 feet deep.
How many stories is that?
I think a story is, what, about somewhere between 15 and 20 feet? So about probably at least 10 stories.
Wow.
That's some seriously deep roots.
With that wow factor, we're going to have to take a break and continue. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hello, folks. The Garden Guy is back with Tom and Sue Mazure. We're in the August program. Gary, what's growing this month? In other words, maybe what's harvesting this month in your garden?
Well, I don't have a garden this year in terms of vegetables because I caught COVID during the planting time. I was laid out, Tom.
That can mess up your growing season.
Yeah, it did. It was just too late by the time I started feeling better to plant. So, but anyway, in August is when we're starting to get just about everything out of the garden. You're finishing up on things like the leafy greens that you started early, and hopefully you planted some more of those things, and radishes and that kind of stuff. But sweet corn is coming in. Sweet corn starts in July, but it'll continue depending on when you planted it. And you'll know when the raccoons start tearing everything up, when you need to harvest it. You'll start getting some of the early melons in, like the muskmelons and honeydews and things of that sort. You're going to wait a while with your watermelon, unless it's an icebox type and you were able to get it out really early. But usually those don't come until about September. Also, midsummer is a great time to harvest your summer squash, spaghetti squash, zucchini, things of that sort. But one of the things that I would suggest people do is go online and find out when is the best time to harvest in terms of size. For instance, with beets, a lot of times people wait until those beets are like 2 or 3 inches across or bigger, and actually the best ones are about 2 inches across. That's when you're going to have the best quality. And, of course, if you don't watch your zucchini, you'll get these big monsters. But we said in previous programs, the best ones are only about 7 or 8 inches long. And, of course, when you are harvesting sweet corn, for instance, you should check the kernels because they should still be milky unless you like a firmer kernel, which a lot of people from Eastern Europe do. They don't like their sweet corn really how do you say, milky? And, of course, you need to keep picking your green beans, and they'll keep producing for you. And if you're planting spinach this time of year in August when it's really hot, I would strongly suggest you try to get a slow bolting type. Otherwise, they're just going to bolt and go to flower. So there's lots of things going on. And, of course, in August we also have peaches. And but the reason I kind of laugh there is about mid-August is when you start getting peaches like the Haven series, like Rich Haven, Hale Haven, Glow Haven. Also, Bel Air comes in at that time and Glowing Star. We have Bartlett pears will come in around the third or fourth week of August. And remember, pears are a little different than a lot of fruit. They ripen from the inside to the outside. So if you wait until they get really soft on the outside, it'll be too late and they'll be a little mushy. And also, pears, the best way to tell if a pear is ready is push slightly on the neck gently. And if it starts to give, then it's ready to harvest. And also during August, we get moon glows. Those are a pear that comes in fairly early. And raspberries are starting to come in. The ever-bearing raspberries will start to come in toward the end of August. Now, one of the things that I experienced with my apricots this year, I had a good crop. And the raccoons got them all. And they will do the same thing with peaches. So what I'm going to do to deter them is I'm going to buy some fencing, and I'm going to put the entire tree inside a very large fence with a top on it so that there's no way that the raccoons can get to it, because they ate all of my apricots in July, and last year they ate all of my peaches, and I mean they didn't leave a single peach. So if you're in an area where there are a lot of raccoons, you might want to consider that.
How tall is your trees, and how tall does the fence need to be to cover those trees?
Well, the apricot tree right now is about 8 feet at its highest, and I can make something high enough to keep them out. And I've got some other things that I might do. I might even put a little electric fence around it so they can't even climb up on the fence. But I'm going to have to do something because they're just eating everything. I got one apricot, just one, out of two trees. And there were probably at least maybe 100 apricots on those two trees.
Well, they just left you one just to tell you how good they took.
Well, actually, I think they hadn't found the trees yet. They hadn't checked them. And one of the trees, it was still a young tree, and they damaged it. So I'm not mad at the raccoons, because I commend them for their choice of food, because it's much healthier for them to eat fresh fruits. But I also see their scat around the yard, and I examined their scat, and I could tell they were eating my raspberries. So it's just kind of frustrating.
Wow.
Gardening for the raccoons. They thank you, I can tell.
Oh, I'm sure they're pretty fat, too. And then the other thing I have going for me this year is I have lemons on my lemon tree.
Oh.
Which is kind of cool. Now, they probably won't ripen until, like, December. So they're going to be on there a long time. But right now, I have lemons of different sizes, but the largest lemon is about the size of a pecan.
Do you have Meyer lemons?
Meyer lemon is actually a hybrid. I planted a Lisbon lemon. That's the kind of lemon that you buy from the store.
Oh.
So I'm trying something different.
So between the raccoons getting your apricots and COVID, this is going to be kind of a slim pickings year.
Sort of.
Sort of.
But, you know, the thing is, Tom, I just don't quit.
Well, that's a good thing.
I have a small greenhouse, so I'll be planting some things in there, and I'll get things into the fall, and I can close the door on that.
That's true. So you're going to be doing some short season crops to fill out because the long season, some of those got taken out or didn't.
August is our last really warm month, and you can get some warm weather about the first half of September, but then it starts to cool off toward late September, and that really slows down the growth and ripening of plants. So you really need something that you can get out of your garden in within 2 months. But there are some leafy greens that you can grow that quickly.
We have some exciting news too, don't we, Tom?
Oh, yes, yes. We've talked about it over a period of time, and we are having some success with ground cherries. And we've been just...
Oh, cool.
We've been very amazed that the first year we were unsuccessful in germinating any, I don't know, maybe one. And this year, once it got past that, one thing, they take longer to germinate than I thought. All the rest of them seem to be a week or so, and some of these took 3 weeks, and... I think we did a replanting at one point, but we have some very healthy plants that are 16 to 18 inches tall. And say, why do we have so much trouble last year? So
there's a ground cherry growing. Tom took a picture of it, so we have proof that hopefully it'll be ripened soon. I hope we don't
have
any raccoons.
Just never give up. Yeah, I don't think you see very many raccoons up there. In the north, but down here in mid-Michigan, there are lots of them. But, you know, there's always a war between the animals and the farmers and the home gardeners. And I saw a video on YouTube that just cracked me up. And it was about a squirrel, and evidently this squirrel had been really bothering these people. So, and this had to have been a guy that did this. He made a catapult. And what he did is he, in his catapult, in the little basket area, he put some food that the squirrel would be sure to like. And so the squirrel was coming around, he's climbing all over the catapult, and I thought, wow, I hope it doesn't prematurely trip. But he got in the basket, and then it tripped it and threw the squirrel out of the yard. It just launched him.
Oh, wow.
Now the squirrel can come back, and it didn't hurt him, but it was funny. It was absolutely hilarious.
I suppose he didn't take another ride on that catapult.
Well, actually, squirrels are extremely intelligent, so there's a good possibility that he'll learn not to go back into that area.
So we alluded to disappearing fruit and. Who is to blame? Apparently, you identified one of them, but I don't think it's just one culprit. I think there's other culprits in the garden. Who might they be?
Well, if you don't have any barriers up or anything, rabbits can come in. They like to munch on the leafy greens. And occasionally, you will see a possum that will come in. And let's say you're growing strawberries or any kind of fruit that's down low, like grapes, they'll feed on those. Of course, the raccoons will destroy the grapes too. Also, if you have a woodchuck nearby, they'll come in and they love to chew on things. They'll chew on your tomatoes sometimes. They love the green beans. They'll go down a row of green beans and just destroy it. And so they'll eat quite a few leafy greens there. And then if you're not careful, and you're in an area where you have deer, they'll come in and chew the tops off your tomatoes, and they kind of nibble on a lot of different things. They'll make bites in your squash, bites in your melons.
Tom's had a problem with his beets. Yes. Somebody's been eating the beets.
Yes, I don't know if it's a chipmunk, or do voles eat any of our vegetable gardens? Or
oh, yeah, they'll chew the tops off the root crops. Voles, few mice will feed on some things, but they're not a major pest. So they're more likely to eat seeds or young seedlings and things of that sort. If food is not plentiful, then they'll start to nibble on things. They'll nibble on vegetables. But there's so much food around that they probably won't go into your garden and do very much damage. But they can do a little bit of damage.
Tell us about medicinal plants, maybe the top 10. What do you know about medicinal plants?
Well, the reason I put this topic in here, You know, most people, when they're sick, they just go to the doctor and then they get a prescription. But as we've been talking about over the last few months, we've talked about what happens if things kind of go south. What are you going to do? For instance, if you can't buy food, you have to grow your own. If you can't go to the doctor and you have, a minor injury, which might turn into a major injury if you don't get some antibiotics or something like that, then there are a number of different medicinal herbs. And the first thing I want to tell you is I don't try to tell people what they should do, because medicinal herbs can be helpful, but they can also be dangerous in certain situations. So you should work with somebody that knows something about these things. But there are common things that will be in your garden that can make a difference in terms of they'll have some properties that you might be able to use if you didn't have access to traditional medicine. For instance, we grow a flower in our garden called calendula. And this flower has, this plant, I should say, has anti-inflammatory properties. It can inhibit the growth of bacteria. So, for instance, if you were injured in such a way that you were worried about a possible infection, that could be something that could be helpful. It could be used as an antiseptic, which is usually what we use to clean a wound out. So that's just an example of a one plant and what it could do. Or chamomile. People have heard about chamomile tea to help them fall asleep. This is something that helps to relieve stress. And if you didn't have access to medicine and food and things, you're probably going to have stress and tension. It also can help with minor digestive problems. It's also an anti-inflammatory. Peppermint, people grow mint, and peppermint is one of them. Peppermint actually can help with nausea. It's an antimicrobial. As a matter of fact, if some hikers actually chew on peppermint leaves when they're going to drink from a stream, because there are certain microbes that you can get from streams that can make you sick. So, but again, I'm not telling you to go out and do these things. I'm just saying that these plants have these abilities, and I think it's important that we either get some books that will help us to know how to make these preparations so that you don't hurt yourself, and also work with people that know more about it. There's a basil that's indigenous to India. It's called holy basil, and it also has anti-inflammatory aspects to it, but basil will also lower your blood sugar. I don't know how I discovered that, but I did a little experiment, and what I did was I ate, I hate to say this, I used something that would really raise my blood sugar, which was donuts. And I ate a donut, and then I measured my blood sugar at 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, up to 30 minutes. And then I also did the same thing where I did not eat a donut, and it did make a significant difference in lowering my blood sugar. Now, I'm not saying that you should eat a basil-topped donut, but it shows that basil does have an effect on your blood sugar. There's a common weed in your front yard. It's called common plantain, and it has wound healing properties. It also has microbial properties. It's edible. It has vitamin C and vitamin A and vitamin K. You can even eat it raw, but it tastes similar when you cook it to Swiss chard. It also can be used to make a poultice for insect bites. And for people that don't know what a poultice is, it's a mixture of the herb and some water, and it's like a paste, and they'll put it on the bite and maybe cover that bite up for a while. And it helps to heal it quicker than it would if you didn't do anything. And it also is used when people get a sunburn. Of course, hyssop is another thing that we don't really grow around here, but hyssop can be a diuretic, which helps you to eliminate excess moisture from your body. It also has wound healing properties. It can soothe the sore throat. But you also have to be careful with this one because it can be a problem. It can cause epileptic seizures if you don't know what you're doing. And it also helps with digestion. So, as I said earlier, you want to be sure that you're getting some good advice. English lavender, people use it. It's antifungal, antiviral. It helps with wound healing, helps with curing headaches. So something right out in your yard can be helpful. Hawthorn, which is a tree, It has astringent properties in the bark, and it can help to treat fevers, and it also can have some cardiac effects to it. So there's all kinds of stuff that's right around in your environment that can be used.
Yes, that's
to help. I heard that in World War I, before they had antibiotics, they used to use lavender to wash out wounds and treat them because they didn't have antibiotics. Yeah.
And I tell you what I'm getting doing, I'm learning more about these things, especially wild edible plants, because if you live in a city and you couldn't tell a plantain from a dandelion and you're hungry, you walk by all kinds of food. And it's the same thing with medicinal herbs. If you learn some of the basic stuff to treat minor first aid issues, you'll be a little further ahead if you don't have access to medical care.
So we're getting towards the end of the second segment, but do you have a resource or should we share that after the break?
Well, what I would do is if you find somebody that's an herbalist and contact them and ask them what would be some good books. There are a lot of books out there on herbal things. You can find a lot of them on Amazon, but I'm not an herbalist, so I don't have any specific books.
Very good.
That I would recommend.
Good. Well, listeners, hold tight, and we'll be back after the break with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue, and Tom Majure.
Hello, friends. This is Doug Batchelor from Amazing Facts. Strong Tower Radio is a station that believes in the power of prayer. In the book Steps to Christ, we're told, prayer is the opening of the heart to God as to a friend. Not that it's necessary in order to make known to God what we are, but in order to enable us to receive Him. Prayer does not bring God down to us, but brings us up to Him. What a beautiful promise of God's power for our lives. Do you have a special prayer request that you'd like for us to pray for? If so, call us at 877-278-5512 or send an email through our website, strongtowerradio.org. We have a team of prayer warriors standing by to join with you in taking your petitions to the throne of grace. God loves each of us so much, and He's waiting to hear from you.
Well, folks, the Garden Guy is back from Strong Tower Radio with Sue and Tom Majure. Hey, Gary, we had some unfinished business. You had something more to share with us about avocados.
Yeah, you probably know I'm trying to grow some avocados, and it's a struggle because they don't do very well during the winter. But I was thinking about avocados when I was in the store the other day, and they have the traditional avocados that you see that are either green or blackish color. And then you have these big monsters. They're normally green. And there are different types of avocados. There are three what we call races of avocados. There's what we call the West Indian, also known as the South American avocados, or it's also called the Florida avocado. And you can find those in the store right now. They don't get as soft as the traditional Haas avocado, but they're good for slicing and using for various other things. And but they're pretty big. They're usually larger than a grapefruit, an oblong grapefruit. Then we have the Guatemalan and the Mexican races. And the Haas avocado comes from the Guatemalan type. And the Haas one has like a dark skin, and it goes from green to dark as it ripens. And there's another variety, like I'll use the term fuerte, and it's where it ripens, but the skin stays green. So when you buy a Haas avocado, as it ripens, the skin turns dark. But there are other cultivars like fuerte that the skin stays green even though it's ripe. And as I said before, the larger Florida avocados, they stay pretty firm. They don't get soft like the Haas avocados. And one of the things that really bothers me when I go to the store is watching people picking avocados. And what they do is they always squeeze them right in the middle of the avocado, and that bruises it, and you see thumbprints on your avocados when you get them home and peel them. So the proper way to select an avocado is to gently put pressure on the top of the avocado or the bottom of the avocado. And if it gives slightly, then it's ready. If it doesn't give, usually you just bring it home and set it near something that gives off ethylene, like an apple or some fresh produce from your garden, and it will ripen usually within a day or two.
With that apple, you said by ethylene, what proximity would you put an apple to avocado for it to speed up its ripening?
Well, if you really want it to go fast, then what I would do is put the apple in a bag and close the bag up. And usually, unless it's a really hard avocado, it'll be ready to eat within a day or two.
Okay. Let's move on to reptiles and snakes. Some people are more scared of these than others.
Yeah, most people, when they see a snake, what do you think they do? Or they kill it.
Oh.
And I remember growing up as a child, we would see garter snakes, we would see ribbon snakes, we would occasionally see a blue racer, and so all I see now is like garter snakes, and once in a great while, maybe every 2 years, I'll see a milk snake, and they're kind of cute, but they're quite small. But Michigan has quite a few snakes. We only have one poisonous one, the Massasauga rattler, and unless you live near a swamp, you're never going to run into them. We have some other water snakes. We have a constrictor, the black rat snake, which is a beautiful snake. Of course, the eastern racer, the hognose snake, the queen snake, two different types of garter snakes, the butler and the eastern red belly snake, eastern milk snake. There are a lot of them, but you just don't see them anymore because people have been killing them for so long. And snakes are not really bad for your garden. They will come in, if they're big enough, they'll eat rodents, especially the black rat snakes. But you don't see, I think I've seen one black rat snake from a distance in mid-Michigan, and all the time I've lived here. But if you go down in the southern part of Michigan, southwest, you're likely to find them. But they will do things to clear things out of your garden. But people don't want them around, so there are things that you can do to repel them. One would be to put a barrier of marigolds up. They don't particularly care for marigolds. And also, another plant that they don't like is mother-in-law's tongue. It's also called sansevieria. But we grow that as a house plant. And so they don't like it because of the sharp leaves, but you could propagate a bunch of these from leaf cuttings and then set them out along with some of the other plants to grow in your garden, and that would help to improve the keep the snakes out. Also, lemongrass, West Indian lemongrass, you could buy some of that and plant it. It's drought resistant, so it doesn't need much care. And then two other things that you could find in your kitchen they really don't like is onion and garlic, especially garlic. And garlic, the plants give off an oily residual when the snake slithers over a clove of garlic, and it's very much like cutting an onion. It gives off an irritating aroma for the snake, and it actually will disorient them like a pepper spray. And if you put those different plants together on the border of your garden, you're probably not going to have to worry about too many snakes.
So, but if you can get over your fear of snakes, gardens are a good sign in your garden, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, if you have snakes in your environment, it's actually a good sign that you have a healthy environment. Most people hate snakes, but they can be really beautiful. And the nice thing about Michigan snakes is they're harmless. Most of them don't even have teeth. So they really scare people, but they really can't do much. And most snakes, when they see a human, they want to beat feet and get out of there. Of course, snakes don't have feet, but they want to get out of there. So I don't kill
quick.
Snakes. Oh, yeah, the blue racers are quick. We went prospecting for gold in Georgia, and they were all over the place. And I couldn't catch a blue racer right now at my age. They're really fast.
And they don't like rattlesnakes. I know up here, a friend, he has plenty of blue racers in his valley, and even though there's swamp there, he doesn't have the Massasaugas because the racers will eat them.
Well, snakes will, some snakes, if they're big enough, can go after other creatures, including snakes. You see that with the larger snakes like cobras and constrictors and things of that sort. But we don't have anything like that around here. About the only time you see a really weird snake is if somebody released a pet and just let it go. But those snakes will not survive in Michigan. They just, it's just too cold.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you probably know that down in Florida, they have a bounty for pythons because they've gotten loose in the Everglades and they've wiped out a lot of the natural wildlife down there.
I've heard that's a serious problem. I know that the racers, I think some people kill them because racers are feisty. They're not poisonous or venomous,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah,
the correct term. But they don't like to be toyed with. So if you try to pick them up or whatever, they will bite you. They don't have, like I said, you said no teeth, and they're not venomous, but they don't like being meddled with. So, but they, you can seldom catch them because they are so quick.
Yeah, they are quick. They're really nice to see, and yeah, a snake can get aggressive, but really, even if they bite you, they can't hurt you. It's probably going to scare you more than anything else.
If a snake
bit me, I'm likely to get mad at him. You know, people have this fight or flight response. Mine's more of a fight response than a flight response.
Are there many flower pot snakes in the greenhouses in Michigan? For place people that have greenhouses, I mean, they're very tiny, and they'll inhabit like your potted plants in the greenhouse.
Oh well, yeah. All kinds of things can get in your pot. You don't normally see mice get into them. I mean, it's possible, but you're more likely to have a tree frog that will get in the foliage of the plants. You'll have ants. They might set up a colony in there, or you might have what we call roly-polies, pill bugs and sow bugs, earwigs. And I was looking at an article the other day, and it was talking about how you can have up to 100 species of insects living inside your house, and you probably bring in at least 7 or 8 of them by getting things outside in your flower pots, and then you bring them inside. But most of them will not survive in the house, and they're just a nuisance.
Now, I think we've talked about this before, but it's okay to have frogs in your garden or toads in your garden.
Oh, yeah. My daughter, Leanne, when she was like 4 years old, she used to play with the toads, and we'd have to tell her to put down the snakes and the toads. And they're just fine. They'll eat the slugs, and they'll catch flies and various other things. They don't make much of a difference. And I guess they could probably pick off a caterpillar or two off your cabbage, but they won't make a big difference. But again, when you have things living in your garden, like you have butterflies visiting, snakes visiting, and various other things, then that tells you that you have a pretty healthy environment. But if you were to do a lot of spraying of insecticides and using weed killers and just making it a very terrible place for wildlife, it'll pretty much have nothing there, including earthworms, because some pesticides will tend to kill your earthworms too. So you want to use those things judiciously.
What about, I've had in my hoop house, I've had quite a few birds visiting, dragonflies, and is this all good things? I kind of feel sorry. Some of them have to stay the night because they don't get out in time.
They'll be all right if they stay the night. Greenhouses can get really hot, and if there's no water in there, they could die within a couple of days. So, but a bird getting into your greenhouse, about the worst they're going to do is crap on your plants. So if you just open the door in the morning, they'll go out. Dragonflies, you know, they can take it. They'll do the same thing. They'll go out. So one night in your greenhouse isn't going to hurt them.
Now, is there any benefits to having a dragonfly in the house?
Well, they are predators, but they're not going to make much of a difference to really say that it's worth having them in there.
Okay, so you don't go out and collect them and release them in your...
No, I wouldn't. No, I've never heard of anybody doing that in any kind of greenhouses, so it's just not worth it. And even if you did have some in there, like I said, unless you had a lot of them and you had food in there that they wanted to eat, something that they normally would eat, then they're probably not going to make it in there.
Well, as we kind of round out the hour, we want to squeeze in a few blooming perennials and a little bit of lawn advice.
Yeah, as far as the lawn advice is, unless you're watering, your lawn is starting to go dormant. And dormant is okay as long as we're not in a drought. If it stays straw color and we're not getting any rain at all, you won't know when it goes from dormant to dead. So if you don't want to do a lot of watering, just give it water, a little bit of water once a week, not enough to pull it out of dormancy, but enough to keep it alive if we go for long periods of time. Back in 1988, we had such a bad drought that a lot of lawns in the Lansing area just outright died, and people didn't even know it. Also, when a lawn goes dormant, you don't need to fertilize it. You shouldn't be spraying weed killers. This is not the right time to do any weed killing. And also, if you haven't changed your blades so that you have sharp blades on, now's a good time to do it. In terms of blooming perennials, there's not a lot of perennials blooming for the first time. Bee balm and wild bergamot are. But there are some perennials that will bloom all summer long, like garden phlox, hardy hibiscus, Shasta daisies, although they really stink. Coneflowers, black-eyed Susan, various geraniums. Of course, lavender is blooming right now and will continue. Coreopsis. So there are lots of different things. And, of course, all the annuals are reaching their peak. If you planted them around Memorial Day, they'll reach their peak in August. So they're going to look their best.
Wow. Very good. So it looks like it's kind of a low maintenance on the lawn in August.
If you're not fertilizing and watering so that your lawn is still actively growing, you can certainly save some gas money.
Yeah.
Because I can't believe how much it's costing me to mow my lawn now, because I have about a 5 to 6 gallon container. And of course, at the prices, we're talking about close to $30 to fill that up. And I can maybe get 3 tanks out of that. So the cost of mowing is going up. So I don't mind if my lawn goes dormant.
Very good. And it's maybe time to get a little maintenance on your machines before you give it the heavy fall, you know, running maybe mulching leaves and all that.
Yeah, make sure you check your oil. You might need to change your oil. That's the best way to keep your engine running well. And I already talked about the blades. Check both your dry belt and the belt that runs your mower deck to make sure you don't have any cuts or anything in that. There's nothing worse than you're cutting the lawn and all of a sudden the belt drops.
Yes.
And if you don't keep a spare in the garage, you can't do anything until you go get another one. So you should check that. And if you have a belt that's getting worn, it looks like it's going to break pretty soon, you might want to replace it on your terms, not on its terms.
Exactly. That is your tip for the month from the Garden Guy. Well, it's been fun, and it's always good to do this with my sister, kind of a brother-sister team here. And Gary, we'll be looking forward to seeing you back here next month for September's Garden Guy. Thanks so very much.
Yeah. All righty. I had a good time.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Bye.